On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Now, we were hearing before the break from the Irish Minister for EU Affairs, Thomas Byrne, about some of the concerns that remain in Northern Ireland about the protocol. And I played you a little bit of Edwin Poot's interview this morning with Andrew Marr on the BBC. Here is another little bit of what the new DUP leader had to say to Andrew Marr this morning. He was asked whether he agreed with the analysis of his predecessor, Arlene Foster, that this season's marching season in Northern Ireland could be particularly violent because of unionist concerns about the protocol. Here's what he had to say.
I do agree with that, and I don't want to use a threat of violence in terms of this. Our arguments are very clear, they're very coherent. This is the European Union seeking to punish the United Kingdom, and as a consequence, Northern Ireland is being used as a plaything for the European Union. I can assure you, Northern Ireland should be nobody's plaything. We are citizens of the United Kingdom, we were citizens of the European Union, and we deserve to be treated with the same respect as everybody else.
Edwin Poot speaking to Andrew Marr again this morning. We're joined on the line by the new leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, Doug Beattie. Doug, it's the first time we've had you on since you became leader of the UUP, so congratulations. Do you agree with the assessment of Arlene Foster and of Edwin Poot that the marching season could be particularly violent this year because of those concerns?
I don't think it could. It necessarily has to be particularly violent. I think it's going to be troublesome in many ways. I think I have concerns that there are people who are frustrated, there are people who are angry out there, and it certainly could turn violent. But at the same respect, you know, people do have the ability to demonstrate peacefully, and there is an opportunity for them to do that. That there is deep anger about the Northern Ireland Protocol amongst the unionist population. But I think it's really important, and it's incumbent on people like me to not play up violence, but to play down violence. I will stand with those who peacefully protest. I think that's important, but we do not need violence on our streets. And I think every politician needs to be standing and saying that clearly, and not play it up as an inevitability, but say that, you know, we have concerns.
When you say that marching season this year could be more challenging, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think more people make. Well, I mean, there's a number of things. First of all, we're coming out of a pandemic as well, so it's going to be a marching season where we still have, I suppose, some restrictions are. Also, yeah, of course, we have still issues here in regards to policing, which have been raised over the year. And then if you add that to the protocol, you've nearly got a perfect storm. So I think it could be just difficult for the police. I think the policing of it might be difficult. I think there may be anger. If you add alcohol to that, you know, you can fuel that anger. So I think it's just going to be really difficult. But look, we don't want to be playing up violence. We just need to be wary that it could go that direction. But I don't want to be on the radio to you, Gavin, saying, look, we're going to have a violent summer. You know, it's just something we're going to have to deal with.
Are you concerned that in some parts of the Protestant and Loyalist communities that this is being seen almost something as a fait accompli? I mean, again, this week we've heard from the Loyalist Communities Council, which is an umbrella group for paramilitary organisations, almost predicting violence this summer as a result of the concerns about the protocol.
I think everybody's giving their predictions of what they think can happen. I think the protocol is a fait accompli. We put in alternatives as far back as October 2019, and we put in mitigations. We as a party have not stood with our hands in our pockets, sucking our teeth, saying, well, this is just going to happen and that's it. We've tried to give alternatives and tried to keep conversations going, and we will speak with anybody. But the protocol, it can't be voted away. People seem to think that in 4 years' time we can vote it away. You can't vote the protocol away. Articles 5 to 10 could be voted away, but they're just replaced 2 years later with a different set of articles 5 to 10. What we want is to restore that fine balance here in Northern Ireland that was brought about by the Belfast Good Friday Agreement. And the protocol undermines that. No matter which way you look at it, it undermines that fine balance. And I say to my nationalist friends and neighbours that I can understand your concerns if there was hardened border on this island of Ireland, but they need to understand the concerns of us as unionists that there is now a border down the Irish Sea which separates us from the rest of our country. So I think there's real concerns here, but the way to deal with this is by adult conversation, grown-up conversation, mature conversation to try and get to a place where we can fix the problems that are in front of us.
The last time I had you on the show, I asked you to sort of explain one perspective to a Southern or nationalist audience, because I don't think it's something that gets an awful lot of airtime in our part of the island, which is how the protocol is actually seen as being a constitutional threat, because those of us, you know, based around government circles in Dublin or beyond, see it only as, it's a bit of a trading barrier, and it's certainly a trading inconvenience, but they wouldn't see it as being a constitutional problem.
Well, it is, because this part of the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland, and we are part of the United Kingdom, now has to continue taking laws from the EU, and we do not have any representation in regards to that. So we have no say in that. There's a democratic deficit with that straight away. We have issues with getting food stuff from the other part of the United Kingdom across to Northern Ireland, and some of them may be switched off. I mean, just the licensing of medicines in Great Britain may be a real issue for them to be delivered in Northern Ireland because of the way the protocol has been brought in. So there's lots of issues, and it's not just the trading issues. It's all of these issues that just make us feel that the Belfast Agreement that we fought really hard for and nearly expended ourselves getting to bring peace to this part of the United Kingdom, to Northern Ireland, to this island, is being slowly eroded and slowly undermined, and we can't stand by and allow that to happen. We want peace with everybody, we really do.
But you'll have heard Edwin Poots on, again with Andrew Marr this morning, making the argument that really what he sees as the best alternative is that you can do without checks at the border, and you can do without checks at seaports, as long as you had checks at some other place within Northern Ireland. So before anything gets exported down to the Republic and into the EU's market, that you only check it when it's about to leave and not necessarily as soon as it lands. It strikes you as being possible in theory, but one would think that 5 years on from the Brexit referendum, if any of these ideas could work in practice, they'd have been implemented by now. So it's either the case that Brussels and Dublin is showing a tin ear to solutions like that, or they simply don't believe that they'll work and that unionists are engaging in wishful thinking. Which do you think it is?
Well, it's really difficult for me to answer that, because if I look at everybody and say, look, they're all operating in good faith here in some degree or another, you know, for me to just come on and say, well, it's all their fault, or you know, it doesn't really work. What I'm saying is this, is that as far back as 2019, Lord Empey brought forward a proposal which we think could have worked, and that was using maximum facilitation and using trusted trader schemes, and then the UK indemnifying any goods that may accidentally end up in the EU single market, and then a cross-border body which could look at any trade that crosses from Great Britain into the Irish Republic and into the EU single
all proposals market. That were clearly ruled out by Brussels as being unworkable.
No, they weren't ruled out. That's the point. But that's the point, Gavin. They weren't even looked at. They were not looked at. And I would challenge anybody out there to say to me where they sat down with that proposal and showed me where that proposal would not work. I have asked that of a number of people, and not one of them have come back and says, here's when we discussed that proposal and this is the reason why it would not work. So I think if we were really honest, Gavin, if we really want to protect the peace in Northern Ireland, we would all be sitting now together saying, what is the problem? What have we got? What is the solution that we need here? And right now, as I speak to you, it's not the protocol. The protocol is undermining that peace slowly, but it will over the next coming months and years undermine it even more. And that's what concerns me, and genuinely concerns me.
Just to bring you back a couple of minutes, I mentioned that the role of the Loyalist Communities Council, which has been given an increasing amount of airtime and increasing amount of prominence because of their concerns about all of this. Given that the Loyalist Communities Council is effectively an umbrella group for illegal paramilitary organisations, sometimes, again, those of us in the South can find it very difficult to understand why they've been paid any credence at all. Do you, given your former role as an active captain in the Royal Irish Regiment of the British Army and presumably opposed to paramilitary in all its forms, what do you make of the amount of prominence they're getting?
Well, listen, I think there's two points to that, Gavin, if I can. First of all, the Loyalist Community Council isn't an umbrella group for paramilitaries. I've got to say, it does have other groups within it. It has women's groups, it has residence groups, community groups, which are part of it.
Okay.
I think the prominence that it's giving to paramilitary groups is really concerning. And my argument to the LCC is get them to step back and get the other groups to come forward, because what we need to hear from the loyalist community is those working class loyalists who have issues in regards to the protocol, who have issues in regards to job and education and health. And that's what the Loyalist Community Council should be all about. And that is promoting the loyalist concerns. And I would say this if I can as well, Gavin, and this is really important.
Sure.
People should not view loyalism purely through the lens of paramilitaries. Paramilitaries are illegal groups, and they need to leave the stage, and we need to work to get them to go. But loyalists are not. They are unionists with a different flavour, if people need to have a way of describing them. But they are probably some of the most socially liberal and forward-thinking in our community. So we can't always link them to paramilitaries, because that would be wrong.
Zooming out from those current issues and looking at unionism as a whole right now, you must be pretty buoyed by some of the recent opinion polls are showing that your party is within 2 percentage points now of the DUP, albeit with the traditional unionist voice also now claiming a large share of the unionist market. Again, for those of us in a southern audience, what would be your sort of 20 or 30 second elevator pitch that will mark the Ulster unionists under you as being different from the DUP or the TUV?
Well, we're after a union of people, Gavin, and we don't care what religion you are. We don't care what colour you are. We don't care what your sexual orientation is. We don't care what your background is. We want people who want Northern Ireland to work, to come together, to make Northern Ireland work. And I will reach out to absolutely everybody, small end nationalists, loyalists, those who don't describe themselves as any of those, in order to make Northern Ireland work. That's the key thing that we want. And the Ulster Unionist Party have always said this and will continue to say this. It is country first before party.
Is implied in that the sense that some of the other unionist parties are not prepared to put people before badges?
I think some of the other parties' language and rhetoric does exactly the opposite. I think our LGBTQ community has been savaged by some of the political parties out there, and I think that's pretty disgraceful, and I won't allow that to happen. So I think there's a hand that you need to reach out of friendship, and then hopefully people will reach back again. And even if they don't agree with you, then let's all be respectful in that disagreement.
There is a danger, and there's some reports today that depending on who is appointed as the new First Minister by Edwin Poots, that there's a chance of Stormont collapsing and then we'll be heading into an election pretty soon. If that were to be the case, then unionist vote right now will be so fractured, there's a possibility of Sinn Féin claiming the office of First Minister. Would that accord with your view of having people before badges?
Well, that's an election. That's up for the people to decide. I hope there is not an election until it's due next May, because that would, again, be destabilising, particularly in the environment that we're in now. So I'm hoping that we keep Stormont rolling. I think it's incumbent on the DUP and Sinn Féin, who are the two largest parties, in order to help the people of Northern Ireland to keep the train on the tracks. And then next year, we will have an election and we will put forward our manifestos and our points, and people will decide. I'm a Democrat. You know, I will stand on a Democratic ticket and ask people to look at the vision I have for Northern Ireland in the future and vote for me. The others can do as they wish, but I'm concentrating on my vision and what I want for Northern Ireland and the people of Northern Ireland and Northern Ireland as itself. The country is really important to me.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Doug Beattie, new leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, thank you very much for joining me this lunchtime on The Record.